Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
I would have seen Bo Dallas on Big Show. And that's sad just because of the Bo Dallas shenanigans he would have pulled.
Now, that, you and LeBar are stupid for saying that. I'm sorry.
This is total crap.
First of all, bada boom, realest guys in the world.
How you know?
Welcome to BS with CSR. My name is Blake Mitchmore. I'm the Bull. I guess that makes my co-host Shane Shoemaker the
shock. As in shocked it has anybody been that the ratings are low again, thanks to anything from Monday Night Football to, if you're nerdy like me, the Star Wars trailer launching. Ratings, you know, you won't see the trailer too, Blake, don't lie.
Oh, hey, I watched it. It was awesome. Ratings were low again, but that doesn't mean we're not going to talk about Raw. We're going to do things a little differently this week. We're going to lead off with Raw. And Raw led off with Stone Cold Steve Austin, Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker, and Paul Heyman. But I didn't really understand why. Why did you bring Austin out to introduce Taker? And then, you know, the segment with Taker and Lesnar wasn't bad, but that's all we get. We've been building this for 5 weeks with network promos and network commercials, and we get one segment, and that's it for the rematch to the match that was too big for WrestleMania. I just don't understand.
Yeah, the whole build-up seems just lackluster altogether. I mean, it doesn't seem like a lot of emphasis has been put on this at all. I mean, you know, the Austin thing was cool. I don't know if it did this for you, but it took me back to 1998, 1999 of watching Raw every Monday and hearing that glass shatter. And, you know, and of course the fans erupted. But, you know, I said this on Twitter, that just shows how just lacking in stars they are right now. I mean, how bad are they hurting, honestly? I mean, to bring all these legends back to try to get a good rating, I mean, it's worrisome to me.
Well, and I just didn't really get how they used all the legends. I mean, we just talked about Austin. That was weird. It kind of felt like they were like, well, you're here, so just go out there and do this real quick. And then they brought Flair out to do the same thing with Roman Reigns. The only legend that did something kind of cool was Shawn Michaels, because it's the usual promo that Shawn cuts, but it still fit with Rollins and his character and the fact that Rollins kind of, you know, gets mentioned in the same vein as being a modern-day Michaels and all that stuff. But overall, the use of these guys just felt weird. It didn't feel like it really flowed with the show to me.
No, it didn't at all. You know, I'm glad you brought that up. But, you know, Michaels can still cut a great promo. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And he was the only one that did well in getting, you know, where Rollins got the rub from him. You know, like, I thought Flair was the worst out of all of them.
I thought Austin was the worst. I didn't like the Austins. I mean, I just felt like, it's Austin. You got to do something more with him. I guess Flair didn't bother me as much because Flair's done the crap with his daughter and all this other crap. So, Flair's a whore. Flair will do anything. It's Steve Austin. You got to do something more with Steve Austin than that.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. I agree. You do have to do more. It was very, very poor how they used him. I mean, no one did well, like I said, besides this and Rollins and that promo that Sean got. Because, you know, I'm a mark for Sean. Come on. He's the greatest of all time. So would you agree with that? Or are you going to, you know, go back and forth on that a little bit? So.
Yeah, I mean, he's without – there's no question in that. But so the use of the legends was weird. What else was weird about Raw was the way they just tossed Eric Rowan back with the Wyatt family. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think that's where he needed to go. I wrote a piece a few weeks ago saying that I wanted Bray to build a modern-day Ministry of Darkness. So, I mean, but you don't, like, do anything. No entrance, no swerve, no nothing. Just lights come on, and there's Rowan. He's back standing. You got white sheet mask, black sheet mask. That's all you get. I just don't get that. I mean, they provided you with an avenue, you know, of Ambrose saying he was going to the ring to fight. I mean, Rowan could have came out to help and then turned on him. I mean, you could have done something, but it was just kind of like, to me, it showed what they really think of Eric Rowan, which is not much, because they're like, well, Rowan's back. We don't really need to do anything. Let's just throw him out there with the Wyatts. I mean, no explanation. It was just awkward.
Oh, it was very awkward. I mean, I remember, you know, looking at my TV for, you know, a minute, and I thought, you know, the whole Bray and Roman thing was awesome, you know, pretty well done. And then just like out of nowhere, Rowan comes in. I mean, like, and then Michael Cole's like, oh, there's Rowan. You know, just kind of didn't have much meaning to it at all. I wish they'd at least done something. I'm not saying that he's going to be a main player in WWE, but they could have done something like, you know, lights go out real quick and he's behind Roman or something. Just something. I mean, you know, I agree with you. I wish they would do something really cool with him, like some sort of Ministry of Darkness. You know, they've got this ability to do something really creatively just awesome with all these guys, and they're just not doing it. It's you know, someone's got to come out good on this, and hopefully Bray does something with this group.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where they're going to go, but what we did see Monday night was we got a Shield reunion, kind of.
Yeah, sort of-ish.
Yeah, you know, we talked about Michaels a minute ago. Michaels kind of baited Seth Rollins into joining Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose, which was really cool. We thought, oh, Shield versus Wyatt, we're going back to 2013, but then nothing really happened. But I don't think that was the purpose of that. The purpose, you know, all day long we looked for whatever a WrestleMania tease would be. Would it be, would we get a tease of Austin versus Lesnar? Would we get a tease of something else? I think we did get a WrestleMania tease Monday night, and I think it was that we are going to see the Shield triple threat match as it's not going to main event because some kind of part-timer nostalgia match is going to be the last match on the card, but that's going to be the World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania 32. Claiming it right now.
Yeah, I've said from the beginning, I think Rollins is, you know, I thought he would hold the title for a year. I think this whole Sheamus thing is going to be put on the back burner. You know, he can hold that till June. I definitely think that was their safe pick as far as a WrestleMania tease was the Shield triple threat. I think that was the best route they could go with that. I still don't know if it's a done deal. I think it's pretty close now. I think it's definitely in time for those guys. You know, they're going to – they'll probably tear the house down too. I mean, all three of those guys can go. But like I said, I think that was the safest bet because I mean, I know a lot of people are still on this whole Austin-Lesnar thing. I don't think it's going to happen, and we'll kind of get into this later when we talk about Hell in a Cell and stuff like this. But, you know, again, that was the safest pick they could go with that route, the bit for a big match anyway.
Austin Lesnar ain't happening because if it was going to happen, you would have seen some seed planted on the podcast after Raw on the network, and we didn't see anything. I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was cool, but it was just kind of like two buddies talking. There was no, you know, there was, I thought for a minute watching this because when they were kind of going through the timeline of Brock's career, early stages of Brock's career, they completely skipped over the whole Austin walking out because he didn't want a job to Lesnar. So that kind of made me think, okay, maybe we are going to get something. Mm-hmm. But it just kind of seemed like they just kind of organically glossed over it because they came back to it and talked about it for a second, and then nothing happened. So Austin Lesnar ain't happening. Austin Taker ain't happening. Mm-hmm. The most you're going to see Austin at WrestleMania 32 is in a referee capacity or some kind of special appearance. I don't think he's wrestling. What do you think of the podcast overall, Shane?
You know, from the beginning when Lesnar was announced, I'm kind of worried because, and you know, we kind of knew this going in, Lesnar's not a people guy. You know, I know it's Austin and a couple
of... He told us about six times he wasn't.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, so if you got someone who's not really a people guy, why do you... I mean, obviously he's a draw, so you want him to get on there. You're going to watch it like I've watched it. But why would you get him on there? I mean, he didn't give much. Within, he gave a little bit here and there. You know, Austin kind of had to get it out of him, but there wasn't much. I mean, like you said, even the you know, where Austin walked out, they didn't really go into that. I don't know. He just, you know, if you're not a people guy, you're probably not going to be very entertained to talk to, I wouldn't think.
I was entertained by it. There's a couple things that stood out to me. Basically Brock saying that he wouldn't say who it was, which makes me wonder, but somebody in the back, some agent, producer, or maybe Vince, talked him into doing that shooting star press where he damn near killed himself at WrestleMania 19.
Yeah.
And then the fact that, you know, he was open and honest and said, You know, had he not gotten sick, dude, he wouldn't be here. He's still fighting in the UFC. And yeah. He'd probably still be kicking ass in the UFC at that. But, you know, and the other thing that stood out for me was Brock basically said, look, you know, he didn't go out and say this, but what I took away from it was, dude, I'm good at this, but I don't really like being here. This is a job. I come in, clock in, and go home. I don't hang out with people. I am not buddy-buddy. I go get my, you know, I get my stuff done, and I'm out. That's it.
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, honestly, he doesn't care because, I'm sure he's got tons of heat anyway because he's got such a big deal for such minimal dates, you know. But when he mentioned the whole clock in, clock out, I wonder how many wrestling purists out there were just totally pissed off about that. I mean, you know, that, you know, you're talking about an industry that's a lot like baseball where you have baseball purists. And, you know, and they got to have it a certain way. It's always been that way. I mean, how many people do you think he pissed off just with that?
I'm sure there were some, but he didn't give a shit.
No, he doesn't care. I mean, you know, I mean, even to a degree, you know, as far as just watching, as long as I have, I'm a little bit of a wrestling purist, but, you know, the guy's a draw. You know, he's going to continue to draw. Like you said, he doesn't, you know, he's really good at it, and he'll do it for the paycheck, and, you know, he'll clock in, clock out, won't make any friends, but... you know, as far as the overall interview, you know, I think I said this on Twitter too. Even starting out, I felt like it was if you're comparing it to a match, I felt like it was the start off with it was a headlock fest to begin with. Them talking about their hunting days and all that stuff. Again, right. You got a few good nuggets in there, but overall, I thought it was. It's not my least favorite. The least favorite is probably the Page one. But you know, compared like the one before this with Edge and Christian, I think that was. Edge and Christian, the rest of them were way better.
They were definitely more entertaining, but, like, you know, you just kind of had to take this one for what it was. I mean, Brock is Brock. He's never going to change. He's upfront about that. He, you know, he doesn't have a problem telling you. He doesn't like people, like I said, and he said it about 17 times. But there were definitely some talking points and some very entertaining things that came out of this.
Yeah. Now, I am entertained to hear who his next two might be. Have you heard about those?
I mean, I know Taker is on the horizon sometime. They announced him way back, and Sting's on the horizon, too.
Well, rumored what I just read before I got on here is Eric Bischoff and Ronda Rousey.
Ronda Rousey I'm definitely interested in. Eric Bischoff I'm not. He's had Eric Bischoff on. And if he has Eric Bischoff on the WWE Network, all it's going to be is a WWE kiss-ass fest because that's all Eric Bischoff is doing right now.
You took the words right out of my mouth. The Rousey one will be worth the watch because he's never had her, as far as I know, on his podcast. Yes. But the Bischoff, I'm not interested in. So.
The Bischoff, you know, if you do listen to Stone Cold's podcast on Podcast One, he had Bischoff on. I think it ended up being 4 or 5 podcasts.
Yeah,
and that was very interesting because Bischoff was not in this mode of trying to get whatever he's doing with the WWE right now. And he spoke open and honestly, he will not do that on this. So I hope that they don't move Bischoff in ahead of like guys like Sting or like Taker, who has never done anything like this and could be a fascinating interview because Bischoff's just going to, you know, like I said, just kiss WWE's ass.
Yeah, I figure they get, hopefully, if they get to do the Bischoff, it's closer to Bischoff's DVD or something, and they get Sting and Taker and the other ones out of the way first. Again, I'd be more interested to hear those than Bischoff.
It will come in Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell is this Sunday, Shane. Let's make some predictions. First match we're going to talk about, IC title match, Kevin Owens versus Ryback. Give me who you think is going to win and why.
It's definitely got to be Owens. I think they're pushing him still. You know, they haven't had much interaction the past 2 weeks, I don't think. It's been just dumb as well as most Raw has. But I think Owens goes over. I think he's the guy to kind of revive the IC title right now, and I just don't see any reason why he would lose.
Yeah, I agree completely. I've got Owens here. If they let Ryback win, I just think that's absolutely stupid because – I mean, Owens can be that guy that you wanted Daniel Bryan to be, you know, that you wanted all these other guys to be that could possibly bring the IC title back a little bit of prestige. And, you know, giving it back to Ryback, it would just be stupid at this point. So it's got to be Owens.
Mm-hmm.
This is usually a topic that we sit and bitch about, but we didn't even talk about him this week, but we got a Divas title match Sunday night. Charlotte versus Nikki Bella. Is there any chance that Nikki Bella gets the belt back?
I don't think so. I think this is kind of the same situation with the, you know, the Owens stuff. I mean, you know, they put this on Charlotte, you know, in hopes that she would make this Divas Revolution, take off like it hasn't. You know, I know they've been building Nikki, you know, pretty strong in these matches lately, but I think it's just for this match. I mean, I don't know where the Bellas go after this, Nikki in particular, but it's Charlotte's hanging on to this, and it looks like they may be going toward her and Sasha. Maybe it's what I've been hearing, but who knows.
I agree. I think Charlotte has to win just because it would be dumb to turn it back, but I don't like that. Charlotte versus Sasha doesn't need to happen yet. You have to do something with Paige.
Yes.
Paige has to come out, even if it's 1 second after Nikki taps to the figure eight. Paige has to come out and attack Charlotte, and you have to do something with Paige. Stop doing these dumbass promos back and forth. Stop all this crap. You have to turn Paige definitively heel on Sunday and, you know, have her either, like I said, either after, right after she wins, or cause Charlotte to get DQ'd but keep the title. Something has to happen with Paige Sunday. I love Sasha. I think she is the biggest star of, at least star potential of the Divas, but you got to wait on that because you got to do something with Paige first, because this Paige stuff has just been bad.
I agree. Can we get more Renee Young in this whole thing too? Since she's the best out of anything, any woman on that roster, so.
I might argue with you of that on another show.
Oh, yes.
I like Renee Young, but as far as best, I don't know if I can go that far.
Well, she's no Dana Brooke, right?
We actually worked a Dana Brooke reference.
Oh, I did. I worked it in there. Next match. What are we getting at?
The next match is the tag team title match with the New Day versus the Dudleys. And I'm torn on this one. Normally I would say, without a doubt, got to be Dudley's, because they didn't win at Night of Champions. They didn't win at the MSG House show. So now's the big chance for them to win. But with the New Day showing this aggressive side and, you know, doing segments every week with guys like Randy Orton and Dean Ambrose and leaving John Cena and Ziggler in the Dudley's land, I almost feel like you gotta have New Day keep rolling. I'm gonna go Dudley's, but I wouldn't be shocked if New Day wins this on Sunday.
I'm sticking with my pick I did, you know, a couple weeks back, and I said, you know, I think New Day's holding on to this at the least until TLC. I think they keep building this whole Dudley's thing until TLC, just to, you know, because again, you got Survivor Series, they'll have a big match there with a couple people. But I'm sticking with New Day here. I think they're going to keep the belts, and I can see Dudley's maybe taking it TLC, and then you're going to get some kind of, you know, TLC 2 with all these guys, and maybe more, you know, at Mania. Because I still think, you know, I mean, the Edge and Christian, Dudley Boys and Hardy Boys feud lasted for a whole year almost. So, I mean, there's no reason why they can't make this. And there might be another team need to be added, but I'm sticking with New Day on this.
Okay, that brings us to possibly the greatest angle in the history of Monday Night Raw.
Oh, gosh.
Corporate Kane, Demon Kane, the split personality. Yes, I'm being sarcastic for everybody listening.
No, you're not. No, he's not.
Don't kill me on Twitter, but Kane is fighting Seth Rollins Sunday for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And if he loses, Corporate Kane is out of a job. I just don't see any way that Corporate Kane's not out of a job. There's no way. I mean, is there any scenario possible that Kane could walk out of Hell in a Cell with a WWE championship?
I don't think so, but stranger things have happened. I mean, there's been stuff where we never thought the streak was going to end. You know, I was certain pretty much.
Yeah, but this ain't Brock Lesnar fighting Rollins.
No, No, but I mean, just giving you just some scenarios here. I mean, you know, the never thought the streak was going to end. I never thought that Sting would lose his first match in WWE, you know, at WrestleMania. I know these are big-time matches, and comparing this is silly, I know, but...
Don't talk about that. Ghoulish might be listening.
I know. He's probably still crying about it, but... I don't see how. No, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. What's he going to, you know, beat Rollins, and then, you know, Rollins going to be in the next round of Raw like, you know, Austin did at King of the Ring 98? I mean, for what reason? You know, I mean, you know, none of it makes sense. This storyline sucks. The high heaven is terrible. I hate that you even liked it a little bit. That just makes me kind of hate you a little bit. So, you know, this I'm tired of talking about it. It sucks.
The only way I see possible is if they are dead set on getting the Money in the Bank briefcase off of Sheamus. Is, you know, but that seems like a very long shot right now, because Sheamus is going to work the pre-show in a six-man, and he's doing tag matches with Barrett. But that's the only way I see it, is if, and I thought that that would have been the scenario with Sting last month, is let Sting win and then let Sheamus to get it off of him. But because I don't think it makes sense to have Sheamus carry the briefcase until after Mania. But I don't know. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. But I got to go with Rollins. I don't see Kane walking out as the WWE champion. I just don't. Unless they want to continue this fantastic gimmick of corporate Kane, you know, Demon Kane split personality, because if they do, I'm a fan.
Yeah, you would love that. I know. I'm just
shut up. Let's talk about the US Open Challenge. John Cena is going away. At least so we hear. We have it. I don't think it's ever been said definitively by, you know, the WWE's taking him off a tour, but they haven't said John Cena's going away after Hell in a Cell.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question for you, and I'll follow up after, is, in your mind, who comes out to answer the challenge? And does just Cena just lose and go away, or does Cena get hurt? How does it happen?
I think, you know, I haven't read everything about this guy. This is probably really a wild card right now. I don't know. The guy I'm actually picking to come out is Sami Zayn. I don't know why. I know he did the Evolve show, you know, with the WWE, you know, kind of did something with that. But, you know, that was kind of, you know, one of the bigger, you know, US Open challenges they had. And, of course, he got hurt during that. I think that'd be a cool moment, and they're in LA, which is a big crowd. I think that'd be pretty interesting. I still don't think Ziggler's out of question at all, but I think you have to injure Cena, though. I don't know, maybe that would play in a storyline too, of like, you know, Zayn got hurt when he faced him the first time, and Cena gets hurt this time, he faces him, you know, and he beats him for the title. I don't know. I mean, there's a couple different scenarios, but I think you got to at least play some kind of injury angle.
See, and I like the idea of Zayn, but that doesn't work in the injury angle to me. To me, if you're going to injure Cena, it's got to be somebody to establish a heel, even though they're going to get cheered for injuring Cena, to establish a heel character or to show a vicious side, and that's not Sami Zayn.
Well,
I think Ziggler's a possibility, but I don't like it with all this random crap that they're in. And it appears, you know, we're going to talk about his debut in here in a second, but it appears Dolph Ziggler is set up with his next feud, according to SmackDown tomorrow, you know. But I don't know, you know, Dean Ambrose doesn't have a thing to do tonight, and we've heard for months that Dean Ambrose might turn heel.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that option. The other one I'm going to throw out there, I don't think it's going to happen. What about James Storm? Why not bring James Storm up and let James Storm fight?
Storm and Cena, I don't see that. I think that's a long shot.
It absolutely is a long shot.
Yeah. I'm not saying, you know, it'd be cool. I mean, you know, heck, you know, if we're going that route, I'd love to see Smojo come in and do that too.
I wouldn't mind that either. Just one of those two guys that I don't want to see a guy like, you know, we heard Baron Corbin at Night of Champions. Baron Corbin isn't ready.
No.
Storm and Smojo are seasoned guys that could come up and do this. Speaking of James Storm, I tweeted it out a few minutes ago. I thought this was absolutely hilarious. So James Storm's debut match was on the NXT show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that James Storm started his career in WCW and spent 15 years on the independent circuit. Sorry, TNA. WWE doesn't think you're a normal company.
I actually did hear that. I watched it on WWE is Facebook, I believe. I saw that, and I was like, 15 years in the Indies? I mean, that's, you know, that's nuts.
15 years in TNA.
Yeah, exactly. Going back to the actual match for a second, who says that Cena has to get hurt in the match or even somewhat after the match? I mean, could he do something backstage where he gets injured by somebody, you think? Or?
Well, you would think that, but I don't know that I think – I don't know if I trust the WWE creative team to actually pull that angle off. I mean –
That's
where I'm torn. You got, like, I feel like somebody has to, you know, that's why I think Ziggler's still a possibility, although, you know, what they're doing with him right now is just weird. Somebody's got to establish a heel turn or a vicious side. That's not Sami, like, I love the idea of Sami Zayn coming back and doing that match, but that's not Sami Zayn.
I agree.
I don't, you know, Samoa Joe can pull that off. James Storm can pull that off, even though they're long shots. We've wanted it from Dean Ambrose. It's going to be really interesting to see who it is. You know, I guess if you made a pick of Zayn, I'll make a wild card pick with James Storm. It's not going to happen. I don't have a lot of faith in that, but I'll just make a wild card pick, throw something against the wall, see if it sticks. So we'll see on Sunday who's it going to be, what happens. You know, is John Cena really, you know, maybe John Cena will just pull the crap he pulled a couple years ago at SummerSlam and just come out and make a statement saying, hey, I got to go away for a little bit. But I hope they do some kind of angle instead of that. They need to, you know, we need to get back to storytelling and doing some kind of angle. And Sunday is the chance to do that with John Cena. And please, WWE, don't screw it up. Tonight I'm joined by the newest member of CSR and 20-year official in WWE, Jimmy Corderas. How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm doing great, Blake. How are you?
I'm good. So, Jimmy, one thing I've always wondered from a referee standpoint is, do you guys take any kind of training as far as bumps or anything like that goes?
It's funny because back when I started, it wasn't like it is today where the guys are down in the performance center and they do all the training. They pretty much learn everything down there, not only the referee, but you know, it's also like cardio training, keeping in shape. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to say I know this for 100%, but I'm pretty sure they get in the ring and take bumps as well. So I'm sure today's referees down at the Performance Center do. But at the same time, I'm of a different philosophy that referees should not bump like one of the wrestlers. It shouldn't look like he is trained to take bumps, so to speak. It should look different. It should look awkward. It should look like he's getting killed, basically, you know? So the hard part is taking a bump that doesn't look like you're taking a bump, but still doing it in a way where you don't hurt yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that's different nowadays is, and not that, you know, guys like you or Earl Hebner or, in WCW, Nick Patrick or guys, referees in your day had a little bit more of a higher profile and were, do you, can you tell me like why you think it is that, is it just a shift in the business or is it because a lot of these guys are younger, but refs don't seem to have near the profile they used to have when you were reffing?
I guess I understand why it's done that way. I mean, maybe it's just to put more focus on the actual talent in the ring because, as I like to say, I've been a referee for over 20 years, but I don't believe anybody really bought a ticket to see me referee a match. I think that's unless, outside my family, that is. But, I guess that's the logic behind it. But it's also, you know, you look at other sports like an entertainment entities like I use MMA as an example. You know, at least at the beginning of the match when they introduce the fighters, they also introduce the referee for this contest is Big John McCarthy or Herb Dean or whoever it happens to be. A mention would be nice, but to totally ignore him, I think it just it doesn't help at all. It wouldn't hurt just to at least acknowledge that Charles Robinson is the referee for this match, or John Cohen is the referee for this match, you know?
Right.
But I, You know, I just think that completely ignoring him is not the way to go anyways.
Now, from a storyline standpoint, I remember back in the day the referee strike storyline, in that you were the one that crossed the picket line. Was there ever another storyline you were involved in, or was that it?
That's pretty much it. That was my 15 minutes of fame, I guess you'd call it. I almost got involved in another storyline before that, before the tragic passing of Owen Hart. It was after the Montreal Screwjob. When Owen returned back to the WWF at the time to face Shawn Michaels and Triple H and go against DX, I was going to be the Canadian ref who kind of sided and helped Owen Hart in his battle against DX. And the day before or 2 days before it was supposed to take place in Long Island, New York during Raw was when it was going to happen. And it was going to be Owen Hart versus Triple H. And I was going to, Earl was going to be the referee. I was going to do a run-in and a little shenanigans there. And later on revealed that I was helping Owen, Canadian. But Triple H 2 days before dislocated his kneecap.
Oh, that was that. Okay, I remember that injury.
Yeah, so they couldn't go ahead with it, even though Hunter, to his credit, wanted to go through with it.
Right.
But they told, no, your kneecap was on the side of your leg. I mean, you can't do this. You know what I mean? So it got put off, and like everything in wrestling, it gets put off. So it kind of faded away and never happened. But that was as close as I came to another storyline.
Okay. Now, Hell in a Cell's this Sunday, and one of the more famous ref storylines I remember, it was probably in poor taste, was that of Tim White. You know, it started with an injury in a Hell in a Cell match and led to the infamous lunchtime suicide vignettes that we got over and over again. What was your take on that angle? Did you mind it, or did you think it was, you know, a little too far, or what was your take?
I was like of two minds of it. I understand how, you know, making light of something as serious as suicide is not always a good thing, but I think it was done almost like a Monty Python kind of thing. It was like a dark comedy kind of thing that was a running gag, so to speak. I wasn't really thrilled with it, but I figured if Tim White was okay with it, you know, how could I not be? You know what I mean? And I like I said, I understand people being upset with it, but at the same time, it wasn't intentionally done to upset people, but it's kind of that fine line. Like, did it cross that line? I think maybe at times it did, but, you know, other times it was, I felt sorry for Timmy because he did there was one where he brought the toaster into a big tub of water, yeah. You know, and, you know, he had to spend the day. That took a couple of takes because I was sitting there watching the whole thing going, oh man, he's got to change his clothes how many times here. So, but yeah, again, it was one of those, I get why they did it. Sometimes I wish they, you know, like anything else, sometimes you wish they wouldn't do certain things.
Right. Now with Hell in a Cell coming Sunday, did you ever draw a cell match in your career to ref or not?
Not on the inside. I actually finished off a cell match on the inside, but usually on the outside. I believe it was the Undertaker Randy Orton Hell in a Cell match that Nick Patrick got knocked out, and I ended up having to run in. So, like I said, never started one, but I've ended one.
Now, from a referee standpoint, is there any difference in preparation from a referee standpoint for a cell match as opposed to just a normal wrestling match?
It's pretty much the same. The only difference is because of the nature of that type of match. And, you know, one of the referee's jobs that some people may not know is looking out for the talent, basically checking on them, make sure they're okay and nobody gets seriously hurt in the process of the match. Just being more aware and trying to, you know, stay ahead of things in case someone does get hurt, and trying to recognize when someone is legitimately hurt, because you know how the guys are. You ask them if they're okay, they'll tell you they're fine even when they're not. So case in point, Foley, you know. the biggest example. Mick, you okay? He'll say yeah, but you know, he just fell 20 feet off a bloody cage going through the announce table. He's got a tooth sticking out of his nose. Yeah, I'm good to go.
Okay, well, this Sunday we've got two cell matches. The first one is Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt. My first question before we get into this actual feud is, with Lesnar and Taker being the second cell match, for me, it bothers me that this is a cell match. I feel like Lesnar and Taker should be the only cell match on the card. Do you think that, you know, do you feel the same way, or are you okay with the fact that they're letting this be a cell match also?
At first, I was very much against having two cell matches, especially with the main event being Brock versus Taker in a cell. You know, I thought having a second cell match earlier in the night would take away from that. There'll definitely be two different styles of cell matches, I believe. I think the Reigns Wyatt one's going to be a lot more, if I could say it, balls to the walls, pulling out all the stops, you know, just a lot of crazy stuff going on. Whereas I think Brock and Taker is going to be a more structured psychology storytelling based match. It'll be hard hitting, it'll be physical, but in a different way. So I think there's two stories going to be told there. That being said, I would have preferred, like you said, I agree with you, I would have preferred having one cell match on the pay-per-view because even though that both storylines appear to be ending at the pay-per-view in a cell, if I had to pick one, it would make more sense for Taker or Brock to end there as opposed to Bray and Reigns.
Right, and for me, like, I think even if it wasn't Taker and Brock, I'd be perfectly fine with Bray and Roman ending in a cell. Mm-hmm. You know, they build this match at SummerSlam as too big for WrestleMania, and now it's not even big enough to have its own cell match on a card. It just kind of devalues it a little bit to me.
No, I totally agree with that. I understand that the name of the pay-per-view is Hell in a Cell, but still, it doesn't mean that you have to have more than one match. I agree.
Right. Now, with Reigns and Wyatt, who do you think, in your opinion, out of those two guys, both of them really need a signature win? Does it hurt one guy more than the other if they take the loss here, or where do you think it should go?
I think right now, believe it or not, I know a lot of people will disagree with this, but I think it would hurt Roman Reigns more to lose in this than it would Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt, as a heel, or supposed to be a heel at least anyways, heels, it for the most part, generally lose long feuds or rivalries or whatever you want to call it. So I know people are saying, well, Bray Wyatt hasn't won any of his feuds that he's had since he's come up to the main roster. I mean, whether it was John Cena losing to Taker at Mania, whatever the case may be. But I think the progression of Roman Reigns since WrestleMania, he's gotten better. I think he's starting to win over some people with his hard work. He is working hard to improve. He may not be there yet, but he's getting there. He needed some seasoning. Maybe WrestleMania was too soon for him. I don't know. That's, you know, of course, subjective, but I think it may have been a little bit too soon, but I think he's getting there. He's almost ready to go. I think the win here helps him more, especially depending on where both guys are going after this. I'm not sure where I see Bray Wyatt going after this, but Roman Reigns seems to be poised for Seth Rollins after this and the WWE Championship. So in that case, then it makes more sense for him to actually, you know, overcome the odds. I know the story is the cell will keep the rest of the Wyatt family out, not like they haven't gotten in there before.
Right.
So, but still, him overcoming all the odds and pulling out a win over Bray Wyatt going forward, I think is best for Roman Reigns at this time.
See, I 100% agree with you. I think that Roman is on the cusp of being where we've always heard they wanted him to be. I think he's gotten a lot better in his promos. He's getting better each week in the ring. And, yeah, you know, one thing that stood out to me last Monday in Dallas, and I know it changes from city to city and crowd to crowd, but the fan base was very much behind Roman in Dallas, and they haven't been for a very long time. He's starting to get the fans back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people are starting to forget. And I think Roman Reigns was just a product of bad timing for his part. The return of Daniel Bryan, as we all know, kind of caused that backlash against him because he was their guy. And I guess people felt slighted that Roman Reigns wasn't their guy. Daniel Bryan was, but now, you know, with Daniel Bryan out of the picture, a little bit out of sight, out of mind, people can sort of focus back on Roman Reigns' progression, which I think is going in the right direction.
Now let's move on to the main event of the night. And I just mentioned it earlier. The match at SummerSlam was called the match too big for WrestleMania. And it's this match, they haven't even, outside of Monday, really promoted it that well. And I don't really understand why.
Yeah, I thought at least, you know, they do the video packages every week, which at least that their video packages are great. I think right. their lead up video packages, but to see the actual guys participate on a Monday night, at least come out, cut a promo, say something, do some. You could have at least had Heyman out every Monday, you know, saying something, because, you know, it goes without saying Heyman's gold on the mic. So, yeah. And he could sell ice to an Inuit up in Northern Canada. So they could have done a little more. I mean, I understand why there was no physicality this Monday, because, you know, they want you to pay to see it on Sunday, you know, right. So to speak. Right. Yeah, I wish there was just a little more emphasis there. I'm more upset that Kane didn't show up on Monday night. And he's the guy facing the WWE champion on Sunday. And, you know, I get the whole part about corporate Kane being suspended, but at least a Demon Kane could have showed up and done something.
Right. Now,
but back know, to the, yeah. Back to the Taker thing. Yeah.
With Taker and Brock. Taker, you know, I don't think you're at this, especially at this stage in his career, Taker's never going to be a heel, but he played more of the heel in that SummerSlam role. Do you think we see that out of him again Sunday, or do you think it's just kind of two baby faces going at it?
It's a weird dynamic. It's almost like you said, Taker being subtle heel, coming out of SummerSlam, leaning more towards the heel side, and Brock being more of a baby face. But at the same time, it's almost like each of them are neither. They're both kind of like their own entity, so to speak. Neither is a baby face, neither is a heel. It's kind of like, you know, two beasts, two legends that are just going to lock horns. And, you know, you talk about it. A lot of people talk about how there's no real true baby faces and heels today. In this situation, I could see there being no real heel or baby face. It's kind of like two guys. But if I had to choose from a role standpoint, who's going to be more of a heel, it almost seems like Taker is poised to be the heel. And if he happens to be the guy who wins on Sunday, I could see it being with some help. I don't see him doing it all on his own. And maybe whoever it is that helps Taker is Brock's next opponent, target, feud, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, now with that being said, I'm going to put you on the spot. You told us that you think Roman Reigns needs it more in the previous match. If you're booking the match, who wins this match on Sunday?
To be honest with you, I think it's oh man. See, that's a tough one, because who does it hurt Brock to lose to Taker? Does it hurt Taker to lose to Brock? I think Brock gets taken down more pegs if he loses than Taker would.
Right.
If that makes sense. I mean, like, in this situation, because as Brock said on the Austin podcast on Monday night, he's the one who ended the streak because he's the most believable guy to do it. So for Brock to defeat Taker in Hell in a Cell, he's the most believable guy who can do it. So I don't think it does really hurt Taker as much as it would hurt Brock to lose.
Right, and I agree with that. I think Taker's at the point in his career where, I mean, whether it's we hear WrestleMania 32, you know, Jim Ross, I know, recently said he thinks he'll keep going, but Taker's matches are numbered. I mean, he's not going to do more than maybe one or two a year, even if he continues past WrestleMania. And Brock is going to, even in a part-time role, going to be a focal point of the WWE, at least for the next two or three years. I feel like Brock has to win this match on Sunday.
Yeah, I see that point completely. And like you said, leading up to WrestleMania, we don't know, will this be Taker's last WrestleMania? I know a lot of people are thinking it may be. And like you said, Jim Ross thinks he can go beyond that. But if it is his swan song, you know, I don't think it hurts him to lose here and then have one last final hurrah at Cowboy Stadium.
Well, outside of those two matches, is there anything else on the card that you're really looking forward to seeing on Sunday?
I think it's going to be interesting. I think the U.S. Open Challenge, because here we go, we don't have an opponent for John Cena, and apparently he's taking some time off, so it's going to be interesting to see whether he does take time off with the U.S. Championship, which I don't foresee happening. I'm assuming that someone will step up to the plate and, you know, assume the role as U.S. champion in his absence. The question is, who's a viable guy? Because John Cena's done a hell of a job of elevating that title. And the guy who's going to be the next guy has to be someone capable of maintaining that momentum of keeping the title elevated. And that's why I don't like the idea of bringing in someone fresh to challenge, like someone from the NXT roster or something like that, or a big surprise guy. I'm looking up and down the roster, and I think the only viable guy right now that could challenge him on Sunday, now that he doesn't have a match, would be Dean Ambrose.
Right.
I think Dean Ambrose has got he's got some momentum. He's got, you know, the crowd is pretty much behind him, and I think if he does something like beat the face of the company, John Cena, I think that will just kind of propel him a little bit forward and push him into another level. Yeah.
I like it. Well, if you're listening to this and you hadn't gone to CSRWrestling.com and read Jimmy's latest column, he wrote today about how the WWE could benefit from bringing back the brand extension. It's a great column. You need to check it out. Jimmy, I can't thank you enough for jumping on with me tonight, and we look forward to hopefully talking down the line.
No, absolutely. I appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, sir.
Well, let me just say this either way. That's just total bull, man.
All right, Shane, you just heard myself and Jimmy Corderas give our picks for Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt and Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. Now it's your turn. Let me know what you think about Wyatt versus Reigns. How's this go down?
Yeah, I think this has been a great feud for some parts, and some parts has been just total crap. To me, I think – this may sound crazy. I think that Wyatt needs this win more than Reigns does. I think Reigns is doing really well, what he's doing on Raw right now, and he's making people look great. I think there could be some kind of screwy finish with this still, you know, and I think me and you talked about this before about, you know, Roman said, you know, none of your boys are going to be allowed in, so, you know, who else gets in? Could it be Ambrose pulling the heel turn, whatever, you know? I mean, who knows? I mean, I just think that Bray needs this. So I've got to go with Bray on this one.
All right. I don't want to see a clean finish in this match. I want to see a winner, but I don't want to see a clean finish. Now, let me ask you this. This is the second cell match. This will be the second cell match of the night. Should this be
I understand, you know, why it is in a way, because it's such a big feud. It's been going on for so long. It's a way to end feuds. But in this situation where you've got Taker and Lesnar, I mean, you don't need it. I mean, they could have done some type of other match. I mean, I know it's Hell in a Cell, and they got to, you know, trying to sell the network number, you know, get the network numbers and all that stuff. But I don't like it, you know. I mean, it could be interesting. And plus, you know, it oversaturates and, you know, desensitizes people, you know, for cell matches, plus where you can't do blood or any of that stuff anymore. It doesn't work anymore, I don't think. So.
All right. Well, the match too big for WrestleMania is now the match that they didn't really even build worth of crap, and there's a second cell match on the card. Taker versus Lesnar. Who wins, Shane?
It's got to be Lesnar. You know, like I said, Wyatt needs a win. I think Lesnar needs a win. The guy's going to be around a lot longer, even though he's got, you know, minimal dates. You're probably not going to see Taker until, you know, sometime around WrestleMania, I'm guessing, unless they do something at the Rumble. Lesnar just needs this more. And, you know, unless there's something to set up, a feud here with Lesnar. That way, you know, Taker gets the win here. You know, right before I got on here, I read something. You know, apparently Meltzer said something on the Observer about, you know, they're, you know, unless they might want to set up some kind of screwy finish, because they're, no one's totally off on Austin not doing a match yet. So does Austin come in and cost one of them the match? I think that's ridiculous. I don't think that happens. I just think Lesnar goes over pretty clean here, and then this feud comes to an end.
I don't see how that works, because that sets Austin up as the heel, and Austin is not going to be a heel in Texas. We tried that at WrestleMania 17. It didn't work. Don't try it again.
Yeah.
I know. Meltzer is he gets a lot of stuff right, but I think he's wrong on that one, and it's not going to happen. I will say this as we close this part of the show out. I know that blood is a big no-no. I think we see blood on Sunday. I think one or both of those guys bleeds. It's not going to be old school, like, red mask, but I think both of those guys bleed on Sunday.
They're the only guys who can get away with it, so I absolutely agree with you on that one.
So look for blood on Sunday, and look for a Brock Lesnar win, because Brock is going to be around and Taker's not. So every show is closed this way. It's BS Moments of the Week. Shane, I know you got something bothering you.
Oh, it's bothering me. It's bothering me real bad, because my BS moment of the week is you bring in Tyler Breeze on the Lonely SmackDown show. Who the piss cares? I mean, why would you? I mean, first, you got Tyler Breeze, who is, you know, who a lot of us thought, you know, he was just going to be the, almost like a, I wouldn't say he was an NXT jobber, but, you know, he was going to be there pretty much to kind of help people get over. You know, then, you know, apparently we hear rumblings he's coming to the main roster, and he gets on SmackDown. You know, I know SmackDown is supposed to be revamped sometime in 2016. It may be going live, maybe going to Tuesdays. But, you know, right now this show is an absolute joke. And I don't know if this is, you know, I know Tyler Breeze actually got a little heat on him from what I heard, you know, saying why wasn't he getting a chance to come on the main roster when all these other NXT guys were. And so I don't know if this is some kind of ploy to him to, you know, just, I don't know. But SmackDown, honestly, if you watch it, which I haven't watched in a while, but when I did watch it, it somewhat was a better, well put together show, and it had like stuff that should have been on Raw, but it's SmackDown. Nobody's watching. It's total BS.
I got to be honest. When,
oh, you suck.
And I even put it on Twitter. I didn't agree with it when it first broke last night. But the more I think about it, the more I see the logic in it. Because with WWE's presence on social media and their website, they put all of it out already that Tyler Breeze has showed up at the SmackDown tapings. I'm not going to say that like it's going to make a million people watch SmackDown on Thursday, but it does. It's going to give me a reason to watch. I'm going to watch SmackDown for the first, or maybe not watch it live, but I'm going to DVR it and at least watch it for the first time in months, because I know he's showing up. So this might be the first BS moment we've disagreed on. I don't know that it was BS after thinking about it for a little bit. I see what you're saying. SmackDown's the bitch. It's the lame show. I mean, it's not as bad as debuting on, like, Main Event or something like that. But the more I think about it, the more I see the logic in it.
You know, I won't even argue that on that, because, I mean, I do agree. You know, does it make me, sure, want to watch SmackDown? Absolutely. But I just, you know, and I'm not saying he's, like, the number one guy back, you know, if, like, Samoa Joe debuted on SmackDown, I mean, even though I'd go back to your logic of, hey, people are going to tune in, I mean, you wouldn't do that. I mean, he's Tyler Breeze. He's not a big name. But, right. You know, I don't know. I just, you know, there's stuff that on SmackDown, I mean, you see the stuff they do sometimes, and it's just, you know, it's just rehashed on Raw because nobody watched the SmackDown. I mean, are they going to, who knows, maybe they'll re-debut him on Raw.
Okay. I am a fan of the Table for Three show on the WWE Network. I loved the one they did with The New Day. I even like the one they did with Daniel Bryan, Kevin Owens, or they did one with Daniel Bryan, Ryback, and Dolph Ziggler. They did one with Cesaro, Kevin Owens, and Dean Ambrose. That one was great. The one they did recently with Sting, DDP, Invader was awesome because I was a big WCW fan. Tonight, since we record this a day early, on the WWE Network, they debuted a new table for three with The Miz, who I don't mind. I'm not a Miz hater like a lot of people. R-Truth and flippin' Curtis Axel. A, what in the hell do those three guys have in common other than being on the WWE roster? B, who the hell is going to want to watch? Like, I mean, if somebody is checking out the network and like, oh, kick ass. R-Truth, Curtis Axel and The Miz are having dinner together and they're talking about wrestling. I'm sorry, who gives a shit about what those three have to say? I mean, I don't get the logic behind putting those three, like, unless it was like, hey, you know, Miz doesn't do anything but Miz TV. R-Truth hadn't done anything cool since he did the Money in the Bank, you know, screw-up angle on Raw. And Curtis Axel hadn't done anything in months either. Let's just put him on table for three just so we can, like, actually make him earn a paycheck. But, like, I don't see who in the WWE thought that that would be a good idea to throw those three guys on a show and let them talk. It boggles my mind. It's absolute BS that that would even, like, pass as a good idea for WWE and whoever runs the network. I don't get it.
The only way I think it could have got worse would have been the Brooklyn Brawler, Barry Horowitz, and Dink. Not Doink, but Dink. And actually put them in a table for three.
Brooklyn Brawler and Barry Horowitz, I think would have been better because at least they were like around and wrestled cool guys. I mean, Brawler's got a ton of stories.
Okay. I'll gobbledygooker then. Are we going to throw him in
I'll
there?
I'll tell you what would have been worse. This is what would have been worse. Asuka.
I know where this is going.
Eva Marie and Dana Brooke.
Oh, you shut your dirty mouth. You shut your dirty mouth.
Anything with Dana Brooke would be worse than that.
See, now, again, we're getting into... I've got my BS moment number two, so, and it's you and your Dana Brooke hate. But, okay, I will say this. I haven't got to watch these Table for Threes yet. I want to, and they look fantastic.
Don't watch this one.
No, I don't plan on it. I mean, you know, once you've said that, I'm done with that. I'm not even going to attempt it.
I'm going to be honest. Even though I think it's complete and total, I'm tempted to watch it just to hear what those three guys have to talk about. Because to me, as a wrestling fan, I don't know what they can talk about that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what have they done? I mean, you know, nothing.
R-Truth and The Miz, I guess, had a decent angle a few years ago when it culminated with wrestling John Cena and The Rock. But Curtis Axel hadn't done a damn thing.
Well, I see. I mean, it seems like on those Table for Threes, they bounce off each other. Like, you know, they have a good.
Well, there's something to them. Like, there was, you know, the New Day was talking about how they all went from obscurity into now what they are now. Mm. Ziggler, Ryback, and Bryan was all about the Intercontinental title. You know, Cesaro, Ambrose, and Owens was three indie guys talking about getting to the WWE. Sting, Vader, and DDP are, you know, three WCW guys. The only thing that I see that R-Truth, Miz, and Curtis Axel have in common is they're all worthless and they're all WWE jabronis.
I was going to say mediocrity is basically their...
What are they going to talk about? The fact that, hey, yeah, we're on the roster and we get paid, but we don't do shit. I mean, I just don't get it. So, it's giving me a headache.
But yes, I do. That is total BS. I do agree with you.
All right. That's it for this week. Follow Shane at SShoemaker24. Follow me at Blake Mishmore. Once again, we want to thank Jimmy Corderas for jumping on with us this week, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.